We haven't heard all that much about the NFL's plans to play this fall, but players are due to report to training camp at the end of this month, and there are plenty of challenges ahead.
They're starting to embark on a season that will last 5 months. This isn't, hey, let's go put you in a bubble for 6 weeks.
That is Lindsay Jones, NFL features and enterprise writer for The Athletic, and she is our guest on today's show. I'm Seth Davis from The Athletic, and this is The Comeback, COVID-19 and the Return of Sports. We'll hear from Lindsay Jones in a moment about the NFL, but first let's get you caught up on what's happening around the world of sports. NBA Commissioner Adam Silver says he is, quote, pretty confident about the league's plan to resume its season. Silver told Time magazine that the NBA and the Players Union are continually checking data about coronavirus and testing on a daily basis. Silver says there is no precise number of positive cases that would shelve the season, but this week, the Denver Nuggets closed their practice facility after 3 employees, players, and staff tested positive. Next week, a handful of NBA teams are set to go to Orlando to begin training camp. We knew it was coming, but it was still sad to hear there will be no minor league baseball this year after the governing body that oversees the minors canceled the season. The decision, not surprisingly, came down to money. Minor league teams make about 85% of their revenues from tickets and concessions. Top prospects will still have the opportunity to train with their parent clubs, but most of the players in the minors will be looking for work elsewhere, most likely in independent leagues during the season. Now to the NFL, where the start of training camp is fast approaching. We discuss what's ahead with The Athletic's NFL writer, Lindsay Jones. Lindsay, welcome to the podcast. Let's just start with a general overview. Where is the NFL right now on its plan to return? Are we likely to have a season?
Well, those are big questions. I know you're starting off with the easy ones here, but so where the NFL is that they're still proceeding as if there's going to be business as close to usual as possible. They're admitting that it's not going to look like a regular season. Training camp isn't going to look like a normal training camp, but largely like they've been really since the pandemic started back in March, they're proceeding as like they're going to be able to pull off a full 16-game season and a full postseason. Will that happen? I'm not sure. I mean, I think a lot is going to really depend on what happens over the next couple of weeks, both within the league, within the NFL Players Association, and then largely what's happening around the country. I mean, I think on a daily basis, we're seeing state and local regulations change again. We're seeing, you know, new spikes in areas that are home to lots of NFL teams and lots of NFL players. So there's still a lot of outstanding questions. But what we can say for sure is that the NFL has told all 32 of its teams and all of its 2,000 or so players that they expect to report to training camp on July 28th.
You know, what's interesting is, and part of this is because we've done like a million shows about the fight in Major League Baseball, is that we're just not hearing a lot about, you know, back and forth, what the NFL is doing, the various, you know, points of contention. What are the main questions and points of contention, whether it's between owners and players, between the various teams? What are the major issues that if they're fighting that they're going to fight over?
Yeah, well, I think that's going to change within coming weeks because the NFL has largely had the benefit of time up to this point in that, you know, they can really, you know, they were very much looking months and months into the future while some of these other sports were already suspended and having to kind of work through how do we get players back into the buildings right now. The NFL also had the luxury of having a new CBA agreed to and signed right about the same time that the pandemic was starting. So this would be a vastly different situation if that CBA had not passed back in March or in late February, early March. If, you know, and it only passed by 60 votes, which is really incredible to consider how close that vote was and how different not just this season, but probably the future CBA fights would be for the NFL and the Players Association if that hadn't passed back in March. But, you know, we're getting to the point now where, you know, there's real deadlines. And while the NFL and the NFLPA and their medical directors have largely been working together over this past several months, now we're getting to the point where they're going to start being at odds over a lot of different things. You know, they've been negotiating things about reporting dates, the the league has wanted the players to come back early before that July 28th date. The Players Association has said absolutely no way. Seems to be that that one is settled now and that it will be kind of a normal reporting date of July 28th. Now they're haggling over what the acclimation period is going to look like. The players want to have a longer acclimation period in terms of the time that they're going to be back inside the buildings and doing just working out, conditioning and stuff before they actually transition into actual football work. Because, you know, none of these guys have done any sort of football since a lot of them in December and some of the teams really in January. So it's going to be a longer acclimation period than normal. And then we're going to see, you know, a lot of the same battles that we're seeing in some of the other sports where, you know, it's about, you know, the way that contracts are structured. And if you have incentives in your contracts, how are those going to play out? You know, let's say you don't get to 16 games, but contracts are built based on 16 games. What is that going to look like? And then we're going to start having the very serious questions that are going on around sports right now, too, about players who might be concerned about their own safety and the safety of their families, if they might live with family members who are immunocompromised, if they have newborns at home, if they themselves have risk factors that make them at greater risk for severe complications for the complications of COVID. So these are all things that they're going to have to consider. And I think we're going to start seeing a lot more of a fight, to kind of use your term there. We're going to start seeing a much more of a fight over the next couple of weeks as we get a lot closer to the start of training camp.
In the meantime, we saw where Tom Brady was holding group workouts with his new Buccaneers teammates. I believe Matthew Stafford was doing something similar. The head of the players union, Demora Smith, went on record to say the workouts were, quote, not in the best interests of player safety. Are players going to listen to him and shut those down?
Not yet. Not yet. I mean, I follow a lot of NFL players on social media, on both on Twitter and especially on Instagram. And if they're heeding that advice, a lot of them are, you know, showing it on their social media. I still see guys posting regularly about working out, you know, either whether it's just working out in their gyms with their trainers and other players, or like you said, the Tom Brady video, you know, that Tom Brady is convening this large group of Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Matthew Stafford did it. Kyler Murray flew a bunch of Arizona Cardinals players to Dallas and paid for all of that, paid for their flights, meals, hotels, all of this stuff. And the concerning part is that some of these workouts, especially in Florida and in Dallas, these are happening in the places where COVID is exploding. So while these players can kind of believe that they're doing, that they're trying to be safe themselves, and I have questions about how responsible that is, they're also taking themselves into kind of COVID hotspots right now, less than a month before training camp. So, you know, yes, the NFLPA statement, I guess now about a week and a half ago, encouraging players not to work out was one thing. The NFL executives came out and basically said the same thing on a conference call last week with reporters. You know, I was one of three reporters who asked them pretty direct questions about, what are you going to tell players? You clearly don't want them working out. And it's kind of a tricky situation where they can't legally say, do not work out, but they're trying to, you know, think about, you're trying to tell the players to like, think about the greater good here. Think about our entire season. Think about your community and your families. And that doesn't really seem to be sinking in quite yet, despite the number of cases that we're seeing exploding, not just around the country, but specifically within other professional sports.
So you mentioned about the opening of training camps in late July. What's that going to look like? What kind of modifications are going to be in place as far as we know?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest change from what people are used to is that they're all going to be closed. I mean, training camp is usually the most accessible time of the NFL season, where a lot of teams go away. They go to college campuses. Dallas Cowboys go to California. It's, you know, it's a very fan-friendly event. So that's not going to happen this year. Obviously, everything is going to be closed. But in terms of protocols, the league and the PA are still arguing or negotiating over a lot of these things. But what we do know is that players are going to be encouraged to quarantine for 2 weeks before they report for training camp. Note the word encouraged. They're not going to be able to force them to quarantine before. But then once they arrive, players are going to be tested 48 hours before officially reporting, both tested for COVID and for COVID antibodies. And then the expectation is that they're going to be continued to be tested 2 to 3 times a week. Exactly what that testing is going to look like, who's going to administer it, who is going to have access to that data, that part is all still being negotiated. When we spoke to Dr. Alan Sills, the NFL's medical director, about a week ago, he said that they're hopeful that there's going to be a saliva test available, which will accelerate the process. It'll make it a lot faster for everybody to get results. I don't believe that has actually happened yet, but that's one thing they're hoping to do. And they believe that there's going to be a third party that will administer the test, because the players have a big concern that if the league is doing all of the testing, how upfront are they going to be? Will they hide positive results? You know, would they mess with results to get players active for game days, these sorts of things? So the Players Association wants to have a third party testing, and it sounds like that is going to happen. They're just figuring out which company that is going to be, which lab is going to handle all the testing. And then one of the things that both the league side and certainly on the PA side has said all along is that they don't want to overly burden the system. They don't, you know, the NFL is going to have about 2,000 players or more in training camp. And if all of those players are going to be tested 2 to 3 times a week, that's a lot of tests. And, you know, if we are, you know, if this second wave, if it's even fair to call it a second wave and not still part of the first wave, if that second wave is raging, will it be responsible for the NFL to commandeer that amount of testing and lab space and, you know, medical personnel, that sort of stuff? That's something that they also have to consider. So, you know, those are the big things. But then, you know, it's all these other, they're calling it tiered access, where players are going to be tier one, coaches and players and coaches are going to be tier one, football operations staff, you know, general managers, the scouts, the people who have to actually have direct contact with players and coaches, they'll be tier two. And then everybody else who works for the team, whether that's, you know, PR staffs, marketing, finance, those people will all be tier three. And tier three will be cordoned off from the rest of, from tier one and tier two to limit access. Basically, they're not doing a bubble, you know, like the NBA. They're not doing this NBA bubble, but they're going to try to keep players isolated as much as they can within their own buildings. So I guess those are the really big things that go on in terms of the protocols for training camp. But there are so many questions still remaining about how you not just get to the regular season and get into games, but how you make it through a single day at training camp in terms of what do locker rooms look like, you know, sanitization of equipment and mouth guards and helmets and shoulder pads. And, you know, how do you cycle 90 guys in and out of a cafeteria, all of these sorts of things that they're still trying to hammer out the details about how that's going to work.
Well, of course, we recently heard from Anthony Fauci. I guess he was asked about the NFL and he threw cold water on a lot of this and basically says he doesn't see the NFL having a season unless they do a bubble. Do you think he's changing any minds on that?
Yeah, I don't know. And I think the fact that the NBA is having a hard time launching their bubble right now is probably not helping that idea that a bubble is the way to make this work. I just think the NFL inherently has so many more challenges than any of the other professional sports leagues that it just makes that sort of bubble scenario really, really difficult. I mean, not the least of which is that they're starting to embark on a season that will last, you know, 5 months. This isn't, hey, let's go put you in a bubble for 6 weeks, for 8 weeks or less. I mean, this is, you know, they're trying to envision the end of July through, you know, the beginning of February. And how do you keep everybody safe and healthy and in a bubble for that long? You can't keep players away from their families, or, you know, players will not want to be kept away from their families for, you know, isolated for 5 months, those sorts of things. And then just the inherent nature that football is just different than these other sports, just the intimate level of contact that happens in every single play during practice, every single drill, not even considering what exactly happens during a game and how you can try to play this game even remotely safely when it comes to transmission of a virus. So, I have a ton of questions. Back in March and April, I was very skeptical. I couldn't imagine how we were going to get to a season. Then maybe in May, I started to think, okay, you know, maybe, you know, the NFL and the NFLPA were getting along. Stuff was starting to like open a little bit. And now I'm back into this mode where I am very, very, very skeptical, because neither the NFL or the NFLPA have come out with really solid answers about how they're going to deal with positive cases and positive tests, other than, you know, if somebody tests positive, they're going to be isolated. Well, that's fine if it's one or two players and it's your, you know, a third string defensive back or something. But what happens when there's an outbreak in one team? Let's say the Indianapolis Colts have 10 positive tests. or, you know, it's five players and five coaches, or what do you do when there's an outbreak? And I think it's very possible that there will be outbreaks within these teams, and we haven't really seen a good answer, like a really specific plan about what's going to happen to the season, to the rest of the league, if something like that were to occur.
Let's end with some happy talk, some actual football talk. Cam Newton to the Pats, what do you think?
I mean, it's brilliant, right? I mean, I think this is, it's a move that makes so much sense. I mean, the timing of it, where, you know, the news came out at, you know, 8 o'clock on a Sunday night in late June, that part is surprising. But when you actually look at where the Patriots are at, what their quarterback situation is like, who Cam Newton is, what Cam Newton wants, and the quarterback landscape around the NFL, it just makes so much sense. And there are questions right now about how healthy he is going to be and is going to continue to be if he can hold up. You know, he's coming off of like two pretty significant shoulder injuries plus a Lisfranc surgery on his foot. I mean, those are significant injuries. But if he is able to come back, he's had a long time off now. If he's able to come back and even be, you know, what, 70% of the player he was at his prime, I think the rest of the NFL is really, really going to regret the fact that they let Bill Belichick and the Patriots get Cam Newton for what is essentially a like a third string quarterback contract. I mean, if he makes the max amount in that deal, he's only going to make $7.5 million, which is ridiculously cheap for a quarterback. And it's almost silly that the NFL, the rest of the NFL, allowed this to happen.
I hope we get to see it. I hope we get to talk about actual football and football games. Lindsay, thanks for coming on the podcast. Hope we can trouble you again down the road, but we look forward to your continuing coverage on The Athletic. So thanks for being with us.
Thanks so much, Seth.
My thanks to Lindsay Jones for joining the show today. I'm Seth Davis, and this is The Comeback presented by The Athletic. Be sure to follow us on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever you access your podcasts, as we track the major issues surrounding the return of sports. Thanks for listening, everybody.